Welcome back, everyone. This is our probably sixth or seventh episode of the podcast. And today we have Braden Dennis, right? The CEO and founder of Stratosphere.io. Hi, Braden.
Hi, and Matt. Thank you so much. We've been trying to set this up for a couple weeks now, and I'm happy to see you guys.
Yeah, and we are happy to see you. And thank you very much to for accepting our invitation. We have been using Stratosphere for some time now, and we have been in contact with you, and we really enjoying the service. So we thought it was going to be a very nice hour spending it together and talking about your story and Stratosphere and just getting to know each other. And so maybe if I can start and ask the first question, I've seen that you are an environmental engineer, so we do share a little bit of this in the past. At least we are all engineers here, but then, this is an example of how life can take you to other things after your degree, right? So how did it happen for you? What was the story and the process there?
We've gathered three nerdy engineers in one call here. It's perfect. So ultimately, right, like an engineering degree, no matter where you get it in the world, is an accomplishment. It is difficult. It requires using all kinds of parts of your brain, and it says that you can commit to starting and finishing something very difficult. That's what any degree says about you, and especially an engineering degree, is because in the world, people want to just be confident that you can start and finish hard things, because what they say, the hard thing about hard things, it challenges you to make prioritizations in your life about what you want to accomplish. And so, I'm glad we can get three nerdy engineers here on the call. Now, with finance, I mean, there's a nice parallel in a lot of this stuff where math definitely helps. Like having a foundation of just working with numbers and not being scared of numbers. Like the notion that math is like some scary concept, or if anything, it's the most beautiful thing, because it always tells the truth. The numbers always tell the truth, assuming that the source is correct. And so I think that there's a lot of parallels still between finance and engineering. And you see a lot of engineers go into all kinds of careers around numbers and math. For me, it was simply, I was just trying to build something for myself. While I was working as an engineer, I was trying to build a data visualization tool and a place that aggregated numbers that I actually cared about. Because you guys know, anywhere pretty much on the internet, you can for free and in seconds pull all three financial statements. You can pull an income statement, you can pull a balance sheet, you can pull a cash flow statement. You don't need a Bloomberg terminal. You don't need to subscribe to some expensive, $20,000 a year service to pull that data. What you can't get very quickly is the numbers that actually move the business. And I'll give you guys an example. My Stratosphere, we raised our first round of funding from venture capital. And every month, I have to send our investors an update. And I just send four or five numbers that are important to the business. Are they a balance sheet? No. Is it a cash flow statement? No. Revenue is just one of those numbers. And then all the other ones are like engagement, how many companies we have under our coverage, page speed, feature development. Those are the things that actually move our business, and not like earnings per share. Like it's irrelevant. And oftentimes with large public companies, this is no different. If you look at Airbnb, what moves their business? It's number of nights booked and daily booking rate, like how much it costs to book a night in aggregate across their platform. Those two numbers move the whole business. For Netflix, it's number of subscribers and average revenue per user, moves the entire business. And so pulling those numbers into a financial model takes an entire afternoon if you go back on historical data. That's the problem that I really wanted to fix. So it was kind of like a happy accident and a foray into entrepreneurship, but just simply to scratch my own itch. And I think that that's more common than not.
Right. So this is why on Stratosphere we can get also those numbers. Yes, there are the usual, let's say, numbers, the financial numbers, and then also KPIs and others, right?
That's right. Yeah. These examples are like, if you're looking at Costco, you know, how many warehouses do they build, or how many locations do they have? How many paying members do they have? Those are the things that are really important if you're going to model out what you think Costco is worth or what you think Costco can be worth the next 10 years. You're thinking, okay, how many warehouses can they open per year? Somewhere around 10 and 12. And what has that been historically? How much is the average price of a membership? Can they hike that? Like, you don't really have to multiply that many numbers to figure out what the top line can be in 10 years for a simple business like Costco. But those are the numbers that you're going to need to triangulate if you want to come up with that number. It's not difficult, but you're going to need to come up with those numbers. And so, yeah, that's ultimately why we have taken the extremely difficult task of aggregating it at scale, and it's had its fun challenges for sure when you're trying to clean data.
And how long has it taken you guys to go from, you know, the idea to something that was, you know, working for you first of all, and then to actually something that you made it into Stratosphere and, you know, kind of like giving a service to other people?
A great question. I originally had a really bad, a really, really bad version of it in making it at home during the pandemic. And it was in the fall of 2020. I just launched it. I made it free. I added a paid tier for people to get like analytics beyond just like my own research and data. I was like, holy shit, mom, random people on the internet are paying me money. And that's kind of the moment, right? Where it's like, someone will pay for this. Interesting. Two, I enjoy this. Interesting. And three, what can it be if I keep working on it and make it better? And it's like everything you work on, right? You're always trying to make it better, no matter what you do in your career, always trying to make it just a little better. Especially if it's a software product, right? Like, you can already start to vision and map out in your mind what it's going to look like in just a quarter or two, and how it can keep getting better. And of course, when you build and iterate like this, break a lot of stuff. We break things probably far too often, but I'd rather move and break versus wait and refine. You know, people who build companies and then, you know, have some big hoopla launch, I think that's typically the wrong way to go. I think you should just build it, get feedback as quick as possible, because what you think people want in your mind and what people actually want might not be the same thing. And so that's why you have to get it in front of people like you guys as soon as possible, and then you can take their feedback and make it better.
This is something that often happens with entrepreneurs, that they build something for themselves. I mean, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak is the famous example, and then others also find it useful. So when was the first time that you started looking into investing? Because of course, this is much later, right? During the pandemic, you already built something. So when did you actually start saying, oh, investing is interesting, and the data is like the oil for
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No, it's a great question, because obviously it stems from the start of me becoming an investor first before building a product for investors. And it was when I was working as an engineering intern. I was in first or second year university, so I was only 17 years old. I was just turning 18 in August of that summer in my internship, and I had already prepared exactly what I was going to do for my portfolio, because that was the age requirement to have a registered tax sheltered account here in Canada. So I was ready to go. I'm lucky, and I'm very fortunate, and I'm very grateful that had that aha moment so that I could start right at the age of 18. Like, this is the dream, right? You want long-term compounding. And the reason that that happened is, I'll never forget, is a coworker of mine gave me a book about basically just how to invest in index funds. It's basically like a John Bogle-y type book on this is what the market can produce historically. If you dollar cost average in the S&P 500, you can expect this. The market typically does, you know, I'm giving the highlights of the book. The market typically does 10%. The market never does 10%, right? On average, the market does around 10% on the S&P, but it almost never does 10% on the S&P if you look historically. Like, I think, what, like 9.9% historically on the S&P 500 over the last 150 years. I think since 1968, there has only been 1 year S&P 500 has finished between 8 and 10%. Look it up. Since 1968, only 1 year has the S&P actually finished in that 8 to 10% on a calendar year, which is an arbitrary time frame anyways, but on a calendar year. So what can you extrapolate from that? That the market is extremely volatile, that on the long term, it produces extraordinary returns. And for those who are willing to be patient. And so that really kind of put a bug in my ear. And I went on the next 5-7 years just holding broad-based, low-cost index funds. It's the most beautiful thing. 99% of the people should do that. Like, it's the most wonderful thing, especially if you're paying mutual fund fees historically. Like, you get broad global diversification for a few basis points in fees. How amazing is that? Like, that's incredible. And then, of course, as I get, you know, more mature as an investor, I started to pick individual securities as well, in addition to the broad-based index funds. That's been a great experience as well, but it's not for everyone, especially if you're investing with your emotion, investing with your stomach and not your brain. Then you should probably just be in index funds, and most people probably should, but you know how it is.
Yeah, and in general, I think, I mean, we have been talking about this topic with many other investors. There are several things that are difficult, right? So the emotions, right? Because maybe 1 year your index fund like does -2% and you sell, and then you're gonna buy it when after he has done +10%, right? So then that's the worst that you can do. And then on top of that, it's really like accepting that in a way you have to live below your means for a certain number of years before you can actually then take advantage of all of these years of compounding and live a good life, maybe retire early and do whatever you want. So there are several steps that are difficult on average for people, and that's why I think the barrier is very high to enter such world.
It's high of a barrier mentally. And what I try to tell people is that it's not a high barrier financially. Because what's a, you know, Vanguard broad-based ETF share cost? Like $30? For no fees, you can buy it for free. You're going to pay like 3-4 basis points a year. Like, the barrier or excuses financially, I don't believe exist at all anymore. As long as you have access to a brokerage account and you have an internet connection. But mentally, it is a method of delayed gratification, right? Like, you can't have everything, right? You can't be regularly dollar cost averaging and then have, you know, $1,500 BMW payments every month. Like, you can't have both of those things depending on your income. And if you can't have both of them, then great, you got a nice income. You have to make some certain decisions about what you want to do long term. And if the $1,500 a month BMW is causing you more stress than good, then maybe it's time for a shift in how you treat your financial life.
Yeah, and that's what's great about, I think, the recent years, that everything has become easier and easier, right? Internet, all these platforms, online brokerage accounts. If you just want to do it, you can do it now. And then on top of that, you have these other platforms like Stratosphere that in a way can help even more investors making the right choices. And on top of that, I think I just want to leverage a little bit on that, because it's becoming easier because of all these platforms and internet. There's a lot on YouTube, for example. Of course, as with anything, you can find good and bad advice, but then it's up to you to decide, you know, whom to listen to. And then I've seen that you also are in the Canadian Investor Podcast. So in a way, you are an engineer, you're an entrepreneur, you're an investor, but you also like to talk about investing. Your Twitter account also has probably 6,000 or 7,000 followers, and you talk about stocks and you use Stratosphere. So in a way, everything is coming together, right? You are investing, you are creating your platform, you are giving it to others, either for free or depending on which plan they use for some money, of course. But then you also try to talk about what you do and advertise in a way, or help people kind of like talking about investing and making it clear that it's there and it's possible to do.
There is a very famous quote for people who build products, which is, build it and they will come. And it is a complete lie. Because if you build it, they won't come. No one will know it exists. You could have the best thing since sliced bread. But if it is the best thing since sliced bread and you build it, you tell people about it, and they might come. If they do and they like it, they might tell their friends. Build it and they will come is just a complete lie, unless you've built something that's like frame breaking, earth shattering, chat GPT, you know, some product that's like going to revolutionize the world, then maybe people will come. But generally you got to build it and then tell people, and then they might come. And for me, that's always been how I treat it. I have fun with the podcast. It's a great business as well. Like it's an advertising media business that, again, complete fluke that happened, but it is a business. And so it all ties together. It seems like I kind of planned it all. I swear to you guys, I did not plan any of it. It just kind of happened. And if you keep every day working on something you're passionate about and talking to people about it, making content about it, then, you know, things, opportunities will kind of come to you. But you gotta tell people about it. You gotta tell them, and then they might come. They might come check out your content. If you don't enjoy it, you just won't show up every day. So if you really double down, triple down on your passions, as cliche as it is, then you're gonna show up every day. You're gonna have the consistency, and it's not gonna feel like work. And you'll see some nice results.
Yeah, and they might talk about it on a YouTube channel. Who knows?
Right. Yeah, exactly, exactly.
So when you were building this during the pandemic, I guess I don't know, were you alone or together with others? How did you build a team then afterwards? Because now you have
seven.
There
of
are a few people at Stratosphere. Yeah,
seven of us in total right now. If you include the podcast, it's 11 of us in total. And it started with just me hacking stuff together, learning tech. Again, didn't think it would amount to much, but what else was I going to do? I don't really watch that much TV, so like, I don't really know what I was going to do. So I just started to try to learn. I always knew that I wanted to learn how to actually build tech. And so I scraped together something very, very bad, which should never be seen again. But because of that first iteration and some initial traction, I convinced my longest time and one of my best friends in the world, I convinced him to come help me out. And he was working with big tech, you know, great job. And so that's always a big leap for a very skilled tech talent to make that leap and trust in me. And so our chief technology officer, Ryan White, I love the guy to death. He's one of my best friends. And he made the leap to come help me build out something real and scalable with the correct infrastructure. And that was really the genesis of what it is today. In the fall, we acquired another website called 10kreader.com. It was he had built something awesome. His name's Kevin. He's one of the now co-founders of Stratosphere. He had built something very, very nice, and it hit something, a lot of things that our platform sucked at. We had built some amazing stuff. He had built some amazing stuff. It was like you put them together and it was 10 times better, because the things we were doing well, we were doing well, but the things we really sucked at, he was doing really well. And so we combined platforms with him in the fall of last year, completed an actual proper acquisition, and Aqua hired him on full time onto the team. And so that has been brilliant for us. Kevin, absolute legend. And then our fourth other co-founder, so it's actually four of us. His name is Adrian, and he's a professional accountant. And there's no one more specific with better attention to detail than him. He leads scraping this data, this granular data at scale, because at first it was very manual. It's become more technologically advanced, with him and our tech team. And so we just have the right guys with the right talent at the right time. And so I'm very grateful of them, and our three other team members we've onboarded recently as well are doing fantastic.
Yeah, we actually discovered 10K Reader just by chance on GitHub.
Nice.
And we were so amazed by the beauty of the website. So yeah, it was really, really good. And and also all the data. What we, or I personally actually liked a lot, was the fact that it's not so easy, or I don't know, maybe impossible, to find at this price tag 35 years of financial data. So I was, 35 years. I was kind of impressed, because, you know, 10 years is fine, 20 years you can find, but more, it's very difficult. So when I found that, I was like, oh no, Matt, we have to to subscribe to this. This is amazing. So I was really happy.
How satisfying too, right? You go on like a company that's been public for a really long time, like Apple or something, and you just scroll along the financial statements and just see visually like revenue line like go for 35 years. Nothing is more satisfying to the brain than that, especially if you like data.
Yeah, and also so easy to use and visual. You can also you try it on the iPad or even on your mobile. I mean, it just works, and it's very easy and nice to work with.
Mobile is still a bit of a work in progress, we'll say that, but the desktop looks pretty nice.
What are your next goals with Stratosphere? I mean, apart from the mobile and of course tuning it here and there, but do you see something very different in the future, or just, you know, this service just scaling it up and up and then enjoy it?
A great question. It's funny because up until about 2 months ago, it's been primarily retail investors that have been like, this is amazing, I need to subscribe. Now we're getting, you know, people running big amounts of money, family offices, large funds, sell side research companies are saying, you're only charging what? Like, you're like, okay. So that's been a really big game changer for us on the business side, and like our strategy moving forward is because like it's an amazing terminal for retail, but it's also really powerful for professional investors, and they don't need to spend the $20,000 a year on a Bloomberg, for example. So that's been good on the business side. On the product side, we are waiting for Microsoft right now. Hopefully by the time this comes out, it'll be available, an Excel plugin. So you'll just be able to open up on the right side pane of your Excel, and you can just pick any company and boom, it's going to pull not only all the financials, all the ratios, but all of those key point indicators and segment revenue lines as well, all the way back as far back as you want to go, annually, quarterly, whatever you want. Because although you can do that right now, to export it into Excel from the platform, something this industry just loves about hanging out in Excel. And I get it. I totally understand. And so that's coming out. It's just waiting for approval in the Microsoft store right now. That's going to be a nice feature launch. And then just expanding our coverage on that granular data all the way out to like 4,000 largest global companies by market cap. We're at about 650, 700 today. We're going to scale that out to 4,000 because we've built a tool that's probably worth more than Stratosphere itself to actually scrape this data at scale. Again, some smart guys on my team. I wouldn't have been able to figure any of this out. So I count my lucky stars.
You can have a scrape as a service side business inside Stratosphere.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, some of these sell side shops, because they'd rather have it internally in house than for now, anyways, until they maybe trust that our data is legit. They're gonna want to scraping as a service, I bet.
Yeah, another thing that I was really impressed indeed was the global reach. It's not, you know, very often is just most data are US centric. So finding, you know, very easily finding data for all the European stocks, for example, or Japanese or whatever was really, really good.
Yeah, so, you see how their logos come in too? I like that. The logo comes up when you search it. Right, because I think that, I mean, there's a lot of really high quality companies in Europe, and the data coverage on even some of the large caps, like an ASML, for instance, like there should be no data gaps for ASML. It's like $250 billion company. Even though like, yeah, it's a Dutch company, like doesn't mean that it shouldn't have the highest quality data, because it's one of the highest quality companies on the planet. So we've always had the approach of just nail the data market cap down. In terms of prioritization, and doesn't matter if it's an Indian stock, European stock, Japanese stock, Canadian, US stock, really doesn't matter, because there's high quality companies that do business on every corners of this earth. So I'm glad you recognize that. Thank you.
Yeah, there are, for example, some companies that are not listed in the US, some Swiss companies, for example, I mean, right, Nestle, right. Or others,
exactly.
They're not Nestle, listed in the US. And if you miss that, you may miss something big. And if you don't have the data easily, then how should you invest in these very big companies, right?
I was looking at a bunch of Polish companies yesterday. And I had never looked at a bunch of Polish. There is a pool of really high quality compounders on the Warsaw Exchange, right? The Warsaw. Dot WA.
You know better than us.
.WA. So I'm assuming it's Warsaw. I was looking at these things, and I'm like, how is it so cheap? And it's like, oh, it's because it's only listed in Poland. That's why. Like, that's why it's so cheap. Mm-hmm. No one's looking at this stuff. So, it's amazing.
Yeah, and actually, we have chatted with a European dividend growth investor. He goes by EDGI on Twitter and also on YouTube.
Yeah,
I think he's originally from the Netherlands, but he lives in Poland. And every now and then, I think he tweets about exactly what you said. Well, that's fine.
I was shocked. Yeah, I just looked it up. The Warsaw Stock Exchange. It's a member of the Federation of European Securities Exchange. Anyways, this was just an experience I had yesterday where I was looking at some companies that I'm like, free cash flow per share is going up and to the right and trades for, you know, 12 times cash flow. Like, that seems pretty reasonable. Like it.
Yeah, I think this is also an example of how such a tool that is surprisingly cheap, as you said, and as others have recognized, can make investing.
Watch what you say. The price is going to be flipped up in no time at this rate. Like if everyone keeps telling me it's too cheap, I mean, I'm going to have to do something about it. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, of course. I mean, you are the co-founder and CEO, so you know whatever you decide.
Yeah. you have an inside track.
Yeah, but I was just thinking that it makes investing easier for people like us. But on top of that, it also allows you to discover potentially cheaper and cheaper investments, exactly because it's harder even for the normal investor or good investor that has access to some services to then go and see exactly like what's happening in Poland or what's happening in France. I mean, France is a little bit easier. There are more famous companies, but I doubt it that everyone knows about all the companies that are in France. I mean, now Louis Vuitton, of course, is all over the place, right? It's the world's richest man now. But who knows, right? There are so many good companies also in Europe and, of course, also in Asia.
Yeah, but even at LVMH, not least in the US, right?
Exactly.
So even in that case, I mean, there are these huge companies. In the case of LVMH, you know, it was clearly a compounder. you have to have the data and you have to trust the data. And for somebody like me, for example, it's kind of addictive now that I have all this data to you know, try to understand, you know, what are the drivers of value creation? Can we test some ideas? So it's amazing. It's like giving, you know, the toys to investors.
I was telling you, man, you get a bunch of nerds on the call here, and that's what happens. No, you're right though. Like I'm just looking up here on LVMH, and you go down to the segments and KPIs, and it breaks out wine and spirits, fashion and leather, perfume and cosmetics, watches and jewelry, selective retailing, whatever that means. You go to their KPIs and you see the organic growth on all of them as well. And it's just like clearly this business is onto something just visually, because we provide like little spark lines for each of those segments. And you're just like, clearly they're onto something. Clearly pricing power is there. And I mean, lots of people are looking at LVMH, but if you're looking at European stocks that are only listed there, or Canadian stocks that are only listed there, Australian stocks that are only listed there, there's just going to be less eyeballs. It just is what it is. There's going to be less eyeballs. There's going to be less fund flows. That's a big, big factor, both on the passive and active management side. There's going to be less fund flows. It doesn't necessarily mean automatically that they're cheap stocks, but could mean that they're a good hunting ground, actually.
Yes, it's very well known that there is a home country bias in investing. Like if you're Canadian, you look at Canadian stocks first. But then in the world, somehow, of course, since the US are, you know, that there's more data about the US, the biggest companies are about the US. So just a lot of people just look there, sometimes for good reasons, but at other times, not for so good reasons, like emotionally, just you look there, but yeah. Okay, what about the rest? But also, you have to have the data to look elsewhere. So you may want to invest in Europe, but if you are American, let's say, or you are from that part of the world and you want to invest in France, you may not want, but if you want, then you discover these amazing compounders. I mean, some of these luxury brands, of course, in the last 20 years, they performed better than most of the companies in the S&P 500. It really allows, I think that unlocks something that is just so amazing for investors. So I think since there are no so many tools like this, I think that people should really, really look into Stratosphere.
You need to do my marketing material. You're doing a fantastic job. No, I really appreciate you saying that. Thank you. I know you're on the pod, so you're being nice, but I know that you actually use it, so I appreciate that. And I thank you very much.
I was just going back in my mind to what we said at the beginning about the, I mean, why investing is hard for some people. Now, I think we hope that it's clear that the tools are there, both to do your own research, and maybe if you're just interested in investing, you don't need to have 35 years. I'm not sure. I mean, we like to do the research. It definitely helps. But of course, having 10 years and the current data is already a very, very good start. And then you have all these brokerage accounts that you can open. Like, we use Interactive Brokers. Fairly easy to open it, also from Europe. Of course, there are some limitations on the things we can buy, but more or less we can, you know, buy kind of everything. So we don't complain too much. But one of the things that we talk with Guy is that, because we talk to many people, and of course we have some friends back in Italy, and we also have many friends in Europe, some also in the US. We have both lived in the US, and there's definitely a different culture when it comes to investing between Europe and the US. I think Europe is some years behind. I don't know how many. We can say 20, 30, I'm not sure.
Decades.
Decades, yeah, some decades. And I feel that, without, you know, being mean or anything, that even when I talk to people in Europe, there is this different understanding about investing than what I have when I talk to my American friends. And one of the things that is very hard to understand is that if you are investing, and maybe you are investing for your retirement, you know, like, for example, we have talked to some investors that don't believe in the pension scheme. So they're like, you know, I don't believe in that. I just want to take care of my own retirement. Or maybe they're like, I don't want to retire when I'm 70. I want to retire when I'm 50. There are several reasons. One of the things that people struggle, I think, at least in Europe, to understand is that what we say with guys, like, your capital is your best employer, right? If you are building a portfolio that kind of pays you an income and gives you a cash flow over the years, that's going to be perfect, right? Whereas, at least in Europe, I don't know, Guy, if you agree, we always stumble across people that say, no, but then, you know, you buy a stock, you make a gain, then you sell, and then what? That's the wrong mindset, right? You just have to invest, hopefully, for the very, very long term. Sometimes, of course, you have to sell, but then the idea is to reinvest the capital in a better stock or in a better investment, and then benefit from the gain or the dividends and so forth. So I think, I don't know, this just came to my mind, and I don't know what's your thought on this, if I'm saying, or if you're saying something weird, or if you agree, if you just have any thoughts that can help our viewers and our listeners about this idea.
The answer is, it's impossible to really put it on to one thing, and I'm not European, so I don't know, like, culture-wise. I suspect that it all comes down to just basic education. I would assume that it roots from education, because no one is born an investor. You're not born an investor. You're born. You don't even know how to feed yourself. You know, like, you don't even know basic human function when you're born. And so you certainly don't know how to invest. And so how are you going to learn that? And ultimately, it's not really from traditional education either, because, you know, we don't learn it here, traditional education. But what you do learn, and maybe in the culture, is you have to, you know, plant seeds now to retire later, or else you're just, you know, it's drilled into your head enough, the problem. They just don't tell you how to do it. And so I wish that they would tell people how to at least start figuring out how to do it, but at least they instill the problem into your head. If you don't plant these seeds now, you will be on the streets at the age of 65 with no job and no nest egg. So no one wants to end up in that situation, right? So we don't maybe necessarily have the tools out of the gate, or the education, but we understand the problem. And, you know, anytime someone is looking to do anything, like human motivation, it always stems from a problem, whether it's in business or just even human instinct to solve something always stems from a problem. You know, no business really finds product market fit without solving a problem first. And I think that that's just enough for people to figure it out. But trust me, we are not there. Like in North America, like if you grab 20 people off the street, I suspect over half of them will not know what an exchange traded fund is or manage the report. Like we're not there yet either. But you're saying that you're even further back in Europe, and maybe that's true. I'm not sure, but we're a long, long way away still, no matter where you go. And so that's why it's important that you guys and I have this conversation. It's important why you guys have your YouTube channel, because there's a problem and you're trying to address it. There's a long way to go still on the education side. Like you leave high school, you leave university, even with a business degree, not know how to file your own taxes. That's pathetic. Like that is absolutely pathetic. And that's the reality. So there's no incentive. The incentives are not aligned for that problem to be fixed because, you know, I think Andreessen Horowitz has, Mark Andreessen from Andreessen Horowitz, he's come on several podcasts and said that education is the one industry that has not innovated since the Second World War. It is the only industry that he says, and he's come out this on multiple podcasts, there's been virtually no innovation in the education sector. And I agree. I think that that's true. I mean, look how everything else has changed. But university institutions, high school, still looks the exact same. Maybe they put some of the tests online with a basic, you know, quiz software. That doesn't count. That doesn't actually change how you learn. And it's usually going to be outside tools students use and learn to drive innovation in education system, whether it's like, you know, the use of tools like Excel or now with artificial intelligence. It usually comes from the private sector and influences the public sector like education. But there has been, I'd be shocked to like think of an example of like what's really changed in the university system here in Canada or anywhere in the past, I don't know, 60 years, double my lifetime, I would guess.
Yeah, no, and on top of that, there's this pressure from society, right? In many families that you have to get a PhD or a master, you have to get a degree. And in the US, there's this big issue about student debt, right? That's even more problematic, yep. You know, where you spend $500,000 and then you're unemployed, or you're making $100K a year, and then you have to live up to a lifestyle of the doctor, right? And then you're never going to be able to pay that off. We watched the Dave Ramsey show. I think it's funny and sad at the same time to hear some of those stories.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, what's the solution? I don't know. I got nothing. I don't know what it is. It's highly complex, and especially when you've built up so much debt, not only with like technical debt and process debt, but literal also financial debt from people who have gone through this system. So there's debt more than just financial here. And trust me, there's lots of financial debt too. So it's difficult. It's a difficult problem to fix, I think.
It's been almost an hour, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. It was nice. Really enjoyed this conversation about your story and about Stratosphere and investing in general. This is what we try to do on this channel. And we hope that we're going to be able to talk to you again in the future. And in the meantime, enjoy the sunny days in Costa Rica. Have fun.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Guy, Matt, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to tell the story and tell the world about Stratosphere. I cannot thank you guys enough.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Thanks.